Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining me now in the studio is Diane Ravitch, a professor in New York University Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She was appointed to the National Assessment Governing Board by President Bill Clinton and served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush. Through extensive speaking and writing, she established a reputation as a conservative champion of school choice testing standards, No Child Left Behind, and other programs claiming to make schools more efficient and effective. In her book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, Ravitch explains how she came to make a radical break with those policies. Her most recent book, just out, is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to America's Public Schools. Welcome to Background Briefing, Diane Ravitch.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And we've just learned that 1 in 10 of the recent borrowers defaulted on their federal student loans within the last 2 years. And that's 600,000 borrowers who defaulted last year. And we're talking about the average borrower with federal student debt now carries more than $26,000 in debt, a nearly 43% increase from 2007. What is driving this, do you know?
Well, what's driving it is that, first of all, the cost of higher education continues to grow. States continue to shift the cost to students, and it becomes unbearable for them. There are also many young people who find they just can't, they would rather be working than be in college and accumulating more and more debt that they will have a very difficult time paying off.
Well, apparently we have nearly 40 million, 39 million borrowers carrying more than $1 trillion in federal debt. So that makes student debt now greater than household mortgage debt. Mm-hmm. And my understanding, without getting into the weeds of economics, is that what's happening to our economy here is that these kids and young people that are being burdened with debt, it means that they're not buying houses, they're not buying cars, they're not consuming, and it's having a depressing effect on the overall economy. So who's looking at this in the macro sense?
Well, I don't think that very many people are. I think if you look at a couple of different factors, one is that we've had seen a stupendous growth in the number of for-profit colleges. The for-profit colleges have the biggest default rate of all in terms of their students. They attract young people, particularly minorities and veterans, who think that they can get a fast education and it'll be cheaper. And then they end up dropping out at a higher rate than if they went to a regular college, and they're burdened by debt. So they're a large part of this. When Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa tried to reform the for-profit colleges, this industry, the for-profit college industry, hired lobbyists on both sides of the aisles, Democrats as well, mostly Democrats, but also Republicans, to defend the for-profit industry against regulation. So they continue their predatory practices. I think also another part of this puzzle that we're in has been this claim that everyone has to go to college or there will be failures in life, when in fact the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that most of the jobs that will be opening up in the next decade don't require a college diploma. Many of the young people who do struggle through college, who do accumulate a huge debt, will find when they get out that there are no jobs for them that are equivalent to the education that they've paid for so dearly, and they'll be selling in an Apple store for minimum wage, are being a barista at Starbucks for maybe a bit more than minimum wage, are taking other jobs that didn't require a college diploma at all.
Well, when you say that the lobbyists weighed in against Tom Harkin, it's worth noting that these lobbyists are spending our dollars.
That's
because
right.
Up to, 80-90% of the revenues to these for-profit colleges comes from directly from Uncle Sam, from government money.
Right. So they're taking public dollars to lobby to protect their private industry. The same thing, which I go into in some depth, is happening in K-12, where we now have a phenomenon of virtual charter schools, which are big cash cows, and they make so much money that they have a lot of money to spend lobbying to expand their reach into more states and into more districts. And they give a very inferior quality of education, and yet they're not regulated because they also make handsome campaign contributions to the right politicians in the state legislatures.
But just in terms of the for-profit college sector, they educate only 13% of students, yet they take in nearly a quarter of the federal money in loans and grants. and contribute about 47% of the loan defaults. Mm-hmm. So there are the statistics in stark.
Well, that's a pretty stark number that right. such a small number of colleges are causing so much of the debt. And these young people
and
will
default
spend.
Default on the debt.
And default on the debt. And these young people will spend years burdened by the debt that they can't repay. So we're actually doing harm to them. And yet I can't recall the New York Times article that gave the names of the lobbyists. Many of them were very prominent Democratic politicians who made their reputations as progressives, and they're now being paid to defend the for-profit sector in higher education, which is a terrible scandal.
Well, my understanding is that the head of the Washington Post, Graham, went to the White House, mm-hmm. met with Cass Sunstein and the others, and weighed in on behalf, because he owns the real profit center for the Washington Post, which was recently sold to Amazon, was this Kaplan division
yes.
that they have. So in order to protect Kaplan and the rest of the four profits, he apparently personally, because he has some clout as a publisher of the Washington Post, went to the White House and weighed in. Also, my understanding is that Susan Collins left the Senate because her husband was involved in yes. one of these shady for-profit colleges.
And yes, John McKiernan.
Yeah, and he's under investigation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who's pushing back? You've got the lobbyists on the one side really aiding and abetting criminality in the sense that, you know, we know that this is federal money that's recycled to these people. They charge it back to these kids at exorbitant rates. They give them a worthless diploma and indenture them for life with debt. So who's pushing back?
Well, who's pushing back? What's sad is it's not the Obama administration, because they've been compromised by having so many of lobbyists that came either through their administration or through the Democratic leadership saying you can't regulate us. And the same, you mentioned the Washington Post. The Washington Post has a lot of clout in D.C., and they were a failing newspaper buoyed by Kaplan University and also by the Kaplan test prep. So the newspaper was unfortunately, I guess you'd say, compromised because its revenue stream depended on these for-profit industries and not on the newspaper, which is why they ultimately sold to Jeff Bezos. The question is going for me is, will Jeff Bezos continue to shelter the for-profit higher education sector and also the testing industry? Will he see this as part of his revenue stream? He certainly doesn't need to. He's already a billionaire.
I don't think they sold that Kaplan to him, did they?
Who kept Kaplan?
I think the Washington Post Company did. I mean, the Graham family did.
Well, then you know more than I do. If the Graham family kept it.
Recollection of the deal. I may be wrong. But.
Okay. I don't know. I assumed when he bought the Washington Post, he bought the package, which would have included Kaplan University.
Right.
I mean, all of this, the whole Kaplan University, all of this stems from a little test prep business that a guy named Stanley Kaplan invented in Brooklyn.
Right. Again, I'm speaking with Diane Ravitch, a professor at the New York University Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush, and her latest book just out is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to America's Public Schools. Now, here in Los Angeles, of course, we have the billionaire Eli Broad. You've also got up in Washington State the billionaire Bill Gates.
In Arkansas, they have the billionaire Walton family, of whom there are many billionaires.
The Walton family alone, the heirs, own the wealth equivalent to the lower 40% of all Americans. Mm. And what are they doing with their money?
Well, the Walton family, the Broad Foundation, the Gates Foundation, are all intent on promoting charter schools, which I argue in the book is a form of privatization because it's handing public money over to private corporations, which is privatization. Gates is not as conservative as Walton. He has also put a lot of money into this idea that you can evaluate teachers by using the test scores of their students. And in my book, I demonstrate that this is a completely invalid idea. It produces results that are simply not credible. That's not the way to evaluate teacher quality. And I could go on and on why that's a bad idea. And Gates himself, I think, has begun to get the news because he said just the other day that we won't know for a decade whether this stuff works. That's the way, exactly the way he put it, this stuff that he's poured hundreds of millions of dollars into, where he's persuaded the U.S. Department of Education. I don't think he had to work very hard to persuade them. They seem to follow whatever his lead is. But the U.S. Department of Education has now foisted or imposed or prodded almost every state into evaluating teachers by the test scores of their students, despite the fact that researchers say this is wrong. It doesn't work. It many excellent teachers will be fired, and many mediocre teachers will get a bonus, and that's the way it works. But many people are being fired based on something that Bill Gates had a hunch about. So that's how he's using his money, both for charters and also teacher evaluation. The Broad Foundation has something that it calls the Broad Superintendents Academy, and it's uncertified, unaccredited, and they teach management ideas. The big management idea seems to be that if a public school has low test scores, you close it and open something else, either a charter school or another public school. But the theory is that schools are like shoe stores or hot dog stands, and if it doesn't make a profit, close it and start over.
So how much of this is the thrall of politicians with billionaires? I mean, Bill Clinton, you know, obviously was influenced by a lot of his friends on Wall Street, Rubin and all those characters, which led to him pushing for the deregulation and getting rid of Glass-Steagall. And we know what the consequences were with the 2008 crash. And it seems that the current incumbent in the White House is somewhat enthralled by billionaires and captains of industry.
Well, you understand that the lifeblood of politics is money. And so it's not simply a matter of being enthralled, although almost everyone seems to be enthralled to Bill Gates. They're so blown away by the idea that this man is worth so many billions of dollars that it reminds me of that song from Fiddler on the Roof, if he's rich, he really must know. So everybody kind of bows and scrapes before him. And I'm afraid that whereas he may be a well-intentioned man, and I don't think he's in it for the money. He doesn't need any more money. But I think he doesn't have anyone on his staff who ever says to him, this is a bad idea, don't do it. So he has a hunch. He goes around the country saying our public schools are failing. Our public schools are obsolete. He's dead wrong. Our public schools are not failing. Our public schools actually have the highest test scores they've ever had in history, the lowest dropout rate we've ever had in history, the highest graduation rates we've ever had in history. He's wrong. And where we do have a crisis is in our inner cities where there are where there is high poverty and high segregation. I note that Los Angeles, for example, is the poorest district, school district in the entire state of California. California has an outrageous level of poverty. And this coexists with some of the richest people in the country, where some folks go out for dinner and they spend $500 on a bottle of wine and think nothing of it, where other people, many, many more people, aren't sure that they will have a meal on their table at night. And this is the scandal. The great scandal is that instead of us talking about a tax structure that allows some people to be multi-billionaires, and others to live in dire poverty. We're not talking about that. We're talking about school reform.
And why do you think then, I've seen 60 Minutes do, you know, laudatory segments on these charter schools, inner city charter schools. Is it the sort of white man's burden idea?
Well, I think
patronizing
that,
kind of.
What we've seen about charter schools is a very well well-versed, well-thought-out PR campaign. And the PR campaign is charter schools are better than public schools, and if you ever hope to send your child to college, you must get into a charter school because they're so great. The reality is that most studies agree that charter schools are no better than public schools if they have the same students. But unfortunately, the difference between charter schools and public schools is that charter schools are allowed to choose the kids. So most of them choose not to have students with disabilities. If they have extreme disabilities, they never take them. If they choose not to have very many English learners, so that they exclude the kids who are likely to drag their test scores down. If the kids have behavior problems, they'll be held back, they'll be pushed out, or they'll be counseled out. So then the public schools, in effect, become a dumping ground, while the charter schools are allowed to pick and choose and continue to grow and to make ridiculous claims because they're not better than public schools.
Well, you've just told us that the test scores are higher than ever in public schools.
Yes.
Public schools are not failing, and yet that is the common mantra.
And this is because, as I try to explain in the book, I used to think that the testing movement was one thing and the privatization movement was another. But I came to realize in the course of writing this book that they're actually part of the same narrative. It begins like this: our schools are failing, therefore escape if you can, and we must save whoever we can save. And that's why we have to have charter schools. That's why we have to have vouchers. That's why we have to have any possible alternative. Kids have to get out. It's all a lie. It's like all a great hoax, and that's the reason the subtitle of the book is The Hoax of the Privatization Movement. The hoax is built on a narrative that's false. And if people understood that our public schools are actually doing a better job than ever, that they are overwhelmed in many cases by the numbers of kids who live in poverty and who come to school hungry and homeless and never having had medical care for the problems they have, we would have a different set of policies. We wouldn't be offering private alternatives to public schools. We would be offering the services that the children actually need.
Again, I'm speaking with Diane Ravitch, professor in the New York University Steinhardt School of Education, one of America's best-known education experts, and the author of the new book just out, Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to America's Public Schools. And in terms of this hoax and the lies about testing, surely people remember what happened recently down in Georgia, where a school superintendent and I think a whole bunch of other teachers would meet regularly and have parties and alter the scores of the kids and fix their, you know, test papers, erase errors and write over them and make them all look like they're a bunch of geniuses. And this school, of course, won all kinds of awards. She herself won some huge award, you know, Superintendent of the Year or something, mm-hmm. got a big chunk of money. And it turned out that eventually they were busted. But the cruel part of it is all these kids who have artificially high scores, what happens to them?
Well, it actually isn't just limited to Atlanta. It's happening in many places. When you put high incentives on test scores and high punishments on test scores, some people do desperate things. They want to keep their job. They have a mortgage to pay. They need the money, and they cheat, and it's wrong, and they should be indicted. They should be punished. As it happens, it extends way beyond Atlanta. The superintendent of schools in El Paso was recently convicted of having gamed the system. He was kicking kids out who might get low test scores before the tests so that El Paso would appear to have higher test scores. There have been reports of cheating in many cities and in many districts. But I think what's behind all of this is the belief on the part of these corporate types that test scores are somehow the end product or the measure, both the measure and the end product, that this is what we have to aim for, that a great education, we're racing to the top. That's the signature program of the Obama administration. We must race to the top to get higher test scores. What I understand is people in the testing business do is that the test is not really that great a measure. In fact, the tests are deeply flawed. I spent 7 years on the National Assessment Governing Board. That's the agency that oversees the federal testing program. I saw many test questions that had two right answers, arguably. I saw questions where I didn't think any of the answers were correct. I saw items on the test where the question itself was wrong or confusing. And I know that when students are giving written answers rather than just picking a bubble, the people scoring these tests are not educators. They're typically $11 an hour workers, temps, culled from Craigslist. And yet they're being paid by how quickly they can score these written answers. They're given a rubric. This is a right answer. This is a wrong answer. The testing industry is pushing this testing. And what few Americans know, even people in the academic world don't realize, we're the only country in the world that tests every child every year. And we're not getting much for it because even if the test scores go up, they're going up because of coaching, test prep. We're stealing time from instruction. There are schools that are eliminating the arts programs, cutting back on physical education, doing things that make school less attractive to kids because the test scores are so important that the whole school year becomes focused on getting those test scores. And this is not good schooling and it's not good education.
Well, Diane Ravitch, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Diane Ravitch, a professor in New York University's Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She was appointed to the National Assessment Governing Board by President Bill Clinton and served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush. Through extensive speaking and writing, she established a reputation as a conservative champion of school choice testing standards, No Child Left Behind, and other programs claiming to make schools more efficient and effective. In her book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, Ravitch explains how she came to make a radical break with those policies. Her most recent book just out is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to America's Public Schools. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.